Roach has it, head of the circle, guarded by Harris. Out to Mitchell, trying to drive on Grady. Dribbled it off his own knee, and Wilson comes up with a steal. Here comes Grady. Ahead to McCullough, back to Dick. He takes a three. He makes a three! Grady Dick from the right wing. The freshman rises up in crunch time. Kansas down by one. Dick receives the pass around Proctor, who nearly got a steal of his own. Kicks it back. Here's a lob to Grady. Two-hand layup. Good. One on the feed. Dick on the finish. Kansas back up by one. Here we go. Duke gets it into Proctor. 9 seconds to play. Duke down five. Proctor, a desperation three, misses. Rebound, Filipowski. He dribbles out. He chucks one up. Doesn't matter. KU's going to win it. The Jayhawks, with a furious fight to the finish, come back to win it 69-64. You can rock. Chalk it up. The Jayhawks win. They've won four of the last five versus Duke.
So KU wins last night in the Champions Classic there in Indianapolis. You had to stay up late to watch that one. And after the first game between Michigan State and Kentucky, which was the best of the two games, went double overtime. Michigan State knocked off number four Kentucky, 86-77. Jalen Wilson, a career-high 25 points on 11 of 26 shooting. Is 0 for 7 from 3, but 11 of 19 inside the arc. 11 rebounds, 5 assists as KU wins. It was a physical game. They knock off Duke. KU 3-0, 7-5 in the Champions Classic. Won 6 last 7 games at the event. Duke's now 2-1. KU led 17-6 early, but only by 4 at halftime. And I'm watching this game going, KU should be up 15 or 20. But they weren't, because Duke just hangs in there, and Kansas had some silly turnovers. But it's 59-54, and Kansas is on the ropes. They trail most of the second half, and they're getting killed on the offensive glass. And they go on that 15-5 run in the final 3.5 minutes. And it's so interesting that I think it was Matt Tate that put it out on Twitter. He said, Grady Dick is checking into the game. He's been really quiet tonight, but he is a guy that is capable of giving having an offensive burst. And he said, KU needs that right now. And right on cue, three-pointer, alley-oop, and a layup on a great little backdoor cut and a feed by KJ Adams. He scored 7 straight points. And that 15-5 run, McCullough had a big follow when they were down 3. KJ Adams, a big finish as he was getting fouled. And KU, to me, it was the experience on the floor at the end. I know KJ Adams didn't have a lot of experience. I know Grady Dick's a freshman. But you had Harris, Wilson, and McCullough on the floor, all right, versus Duke had Jeremy Roach, and that was it. Everybody else was freshmen. And I thought that paid dividends for the Jayhawks down the stretch as they have won 4 last 5 games between the two great programs, Duke and KU. KU's won 4 last 5. No Bill Self on the sideline, no Coach K. He retired. And you know, Wilson was terrific last night. He was able to navigate, weave his way to the bucket on many occasions. DeJuan Harris scores 6 points. The box score doesn't tell everything that he does. His defense is outstanding. He's 3 of 7 shooting, at 10 assists, and only 1 turnover in the game. Kevin McCullough, 12 points, 6 rebounds, a couple threes in the first half. And then Grady Dick with 14 points, including the 7 points in that 15-5 run. Jalen Wilson on KU having success against the Duke bigs, I mean, although they got killed on the offensive glass in the second half.
Just being aggressive, you know, seeing that we had mismatches, just getting downhill, you know, in moments like this, can't settle for shots, got to get in the paint, create fouls, create contact, and that's what we're able to do.
After Grady Dick hit that three, they put him up 2, then Jeremy Roach came right back with a 3, went up 1, but then the alley-oop, which was a perfect pass by Harris, one of his 10 assists in the ball game, put KU up for good at 63-62. Norm Roberts, the acting head coach in place of Bill Self, who's on suspension from the university, said that he was terrific, Grady Dick. There at the end, we wondered where he had gone. We were putting out a search party for him. Well, Coach, he was on the bench. You just weren't putting him in the game, honestly. And Duke shot just 36%, KU 46%. Three-point shooting, not good. KU was 3 of 19, Duke 3 of 21. KU out-rebounded 46-35, and the big number, KU gave up 21 offensive rebounds. But what stood out to me is KU defensively, I thought, was really good, with the exception of being smaller and not getting the defensive boards in the second half. First half, outstanding. It took like 6 charges in this game, and I thought all but maybe one were legitimate. So I thought those are the right calls. They were anticipating. They moved the ball pretty well. They move without the ball pretty well. I think the biggest question in KU right now, and keep in mind, MJ Rice was ill. He was not there. Zach Clements would have been a rotation player in the post who can spread the floor and shoot the three. He was out with an injury. So KU despite not having those two guys, they still played nine guys. They're a very deep basketball team, it appears. They've got some big young guys inside that made some plays last night. And I think the biggest concern for me for KU is offensively. And that's okay right now because your defense can travel no matter what. And KU's defense was pretty good except for blocking out and giving up offensive rebounds to a bigger team. Yes, they're going to work on that. I think that'll get better. But the biggest thing to me I take out of it is this is a team that's fairly young but has some key veteran guys. They didn't have Bill Self on the sideline. They had to wait around for a double overtime game. The freshmen, some of them came through with flying colors like Grady Dick. Other guys like KJ Adams came up big and haven't been in those situations before. And this Kansas team might be better than I thought they would be. I think they're ahead of schedule. I really, it's surprising to me as well as they played defensively last night. Offensively, I think it's going to come around. Although I will say, Grady Dick and Jalen Wilson are their two offensive players, mm-hmm. and that's a lot to put on a freshman. Kevin McCullough is not really an offensive player, although he's going to have to be for this team. He had 12 points last night. Harris is not an offensive player. MJ Rice, maybe he can be an offensive player. Yesufu doesn't seem to be an offensive player. He was at Drake, but he doesn't seem to be at KU. So for KU to win games this year, I don't think they're going to be scoring 80, 90 points. I think you're going to see a lot of games like you saw last night. Grind it out, you know. As Vital says, a Malox masher. I think there are going to be a lot of games like that. And this team can deal with some foul trouble, unless it's probably Wilson or Harris. They can deal with some foul trouble because they're deep enough. But this team may have more potential than I gave them credit for based on what I saw last night. I think there's many reasons to be encouraged if you're a KU basketball fan. I mean, you know, you shoot 3 of 19 from 3, you give up 21 offensive rebounds, and you still win against a top 10 team. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I watched basically the second half. I didn't watch a whole lot of the first half, so I can't speak on all that. But there were times where it was kind of impressive with what they can do. And then obviously defensively, I think they're going to rely on that quite a bit all year, right, how well they play defense. And I think that impressed me more than anything I saw in offense from KU, just to be able to get those and get some stops late when they needed them to, and obviously a shot that doesn't go in for Duke, and then you take advantage of that and extend there at the end and get the 5-point win. So, but yeah, it's impressive what Grady Dick can do to turn the switch on, right? Because I saw him do it in the brief games that were on when he was playing at Sunrise when he was on ESPN. I'd watched quite a bit of those, but that last night he played. He wasn't making anything when they lost that in the national tournament last year at Sunrise. And so I've seen also that spurt where it's just not working for him, right? Mm-hmm. But you see the other side of it where he's got so much talent and is so good at what he does. And obviously that's the reason he's playing so much as a freshman, because it's – and I know Bill Self's not coaching right now, but I'm sure he's still giving pointers to Norm Roberts of what to do via text maybe or something if he's not there at the facility or at the games or whatever. But it's impressive to see a freshman doing what Grady Dick's doing here early in his career and having this much playing time to do it. And, yeah, that spurt last night was impressive. I mean, they don't win it without him at the end, you know, and I don't think anyway.
No, they don't.
Somebody else is going to have to step up and do that, but he hits 7 points in a very short period of time that just – obviously changed the entire ending of the game. So
absolutely.
And Jalen Wilson, he's going to have to do that all year. Now, I'm not saying 25-11 every game. I'm saying he's going to have to be that guy that's kind of leading them, scoring, rebounding. And
he's going to have to take the most shots.
Unless somebody else kind of fills that role in as the season goes on, like you said, like an MJ Rice or somebody that can kind of carry some more of that scoring load for KU.
Bill Self has said that Big 12 Media Days, he said, Jalen Wilson has to play like an All-American for us to get where we want to be.
Yeah.
And he said that's how it was with Thomas Robinson, and Robinson really didn't play a ton right before his All-American year. He played some, and he said, you know, the thing is, we don't have experience posts. Like, back then, Robinson learned under, he was being, you know, there was Withy, there's other posts that he learned from. You know, even McCormick, he learned from other posts, like Udoka Azubuike, whereas KU this year doesn't have that experience in the post, so that's something to keep an eye on, although they definitely got size, as they always do.
But Wilson's got to play like All-American. That doesn't mean he has to be a first-team All-American. You could be one of the top 20 players in America, and you're an All-American, mm-hmm. or top 15. And there's no doubt that he played like an All-American last night. He took over when he needed to take over. He hit two clutch free throws to seal it at the end. He had a 1-1, and in previous situations I've seen him gag, or not gag, that's unfair, he's missed them. And he nailed both. That was a 1-1. So I think there's a lot of room for this team to get better, especially with that youth. And then you have Bill Self back on the bench here very soon. And that's a really good win for KU. I think Duke has a lot of potential to get better, too, mm-hmm. with a new head coach. They're very, very young. They're younger than KU is. So, you know, if these two teams met again late in the year, I think it'd be, one, it'd be a cleaner game. Two, both teams would shoot the ball better. And three, it could be a different result. I'm not saying it would be, but it could be. So KU, a big win. They are 3-0, and the Jayhawks winning. And, of course, as I said, Michigan State beat Kentucky in double overtime in the earlier game last night in Indianapolis. All right, Dusty, local All-State volleyball teams have been announced by the KVA. We got some area athletes that have made the cut.
Yeah, we have eight of them from the area this year. A great representation here from North Central Kansas and NCKSSports.com. KVA All-State teams in 3A. Addison Buckia Boyd was a first team selection. The other first team selection from the area was Cameron Hutchinson of Smith Center in 2A, Miley Brown of Beloit in 3A, Miley Rabia of Smith Center in 2A, Ella Wiles from St. John's Tipton in 1A Division 2, and Keely Kenobi from Sylvan Lucas in 1A Division 1 were selected to the second team in their respective classes. And third team selections for the area were Gracie Kirkhoff of Smith Center in 2A and Lauren Brummett of Lakeside in 1A Division 1. Again, you can find that full list of KVA All-State selections at nckssports.com. So let's look at KVA All-State for the area.
Congratulations to all those individuals making All-State. That is quite an honor. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. K-State football team, 15th in the latest college football playoff rankings. Not that that really means too much, but we wanted to let you know about that. K-State football team now, of course, 7-3 after the big win at Baylor last Saturday. They'll be at West Virginia this Saturday, 1 o'clock. That's an interesting kickoff time.
Yeah.
Because it's on Big 12 now.
Yeah, ESPN Plus when you're second in the conference.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Of course, part of that's also West Virginia.
It's West Virginia, for sure.
Yeah. It was also announced the other day that KU and K-State in Manhattan, the Sunflower Showdown, will be under the lights. It'll be 7 o'clock on November 26th. That's pretty doggone cool. That'll be a lot of fun. And KU could play spoiler and ruin K-State's chance to get in the Big 12 title game. Or KU could do them a favor and beat Texas this week. K-State wins at West Virginia, and in K-State don't have to worry about beating KU to get to the Big 12 title game.
Yeah,
that's also possible. So K-State football, we'll talk more about them later this week. K-State men's basketball team off to a 2-0 start under Jerome Tang. They beat Cal on Friday, 63-54. That seemed like a good win. And then Cal last night, I don't know if they came back and won, but they're down 25-8 to a team I've never heard of.
Yeah, they lost to UC Davis to start the year.
They're not that good.
No, they're not.
No.
But it's that treatment you get being a Power 5 school.
Right.
Like, even if you're not good, it's like, oh, you beat a Power 5 team.
Right.
But did you?
Exactly. Beating KU in football these last decades.
Exactly.
Is that really a Power 5 win or not? Should we really celebrate?
64-62 to UC San Diego.
UC San Diego is who Cal lost to. So K-State's win over Cal doesn't look that as impressive now. But anyway, K-State men are 2-0. They'll take on Kansas City tomorrow, and that'll be part of a men's and women's doubleheader. That is 5:30 for the men's game. Women's game will follow at 8 o'clock against a fourth-ranked team in the country, Iowa. The K-State women are 2-0. Gabby Gregory named Big 12 Player of the Week, the transfer from Oklahoma at 25 and a win over Wisconsin this past Friday there at American Family Field, home of the Milwaukee Brewers. 77-63 is the final. K-State will have, they're going to play 6 games in 9 days, the K-State women. They're going to play 3 in 4 days. They're going to play, it's a weird schedule. They play number 4 Iowa tomorrow, and then they'll play University of Texas Rio Grande Valley on Friday at Bramlage. And Sunday they play Utah Tech, which I had never heard of that college before. Utah Tech. And then they go to the Virgin Islands to play three games on Thanksgiving Day, and then the day after Thanksgiving, and then the Saturday. Six games in 9 days. That's a lot of basketball, a lot of travel when you go to the Virgin Islands for the K-State women. And so the women will play at 8 o'clock tomorrow. The men will play at 5:30, a doubleheader, and you'll see Caitlin Clark, one of the best players in America, on the floor against K-State coming up tomorrow night in women's hoops. The volleyball team for K-State, 14-11 overall, 5-7 in the Big 12. And the K-State women's volleyball team winning their last two matches over Iowa State, and then they beat West Virginia last Thursday. They will host Oklahoma tonight at 6:30 there at Bramley's. Then they'll be at TCU on Saturday. So that's an update on K-State Athletics. Our focus on K-State Athletics brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction and Realty in Beloit. Tomorrow, Jeff Mitty, the head coach of the K-State women, will join us. He will be our guest along with Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks. So busy show for you coming up tomorrow, as we will pre-record that interview later this morning with Coach Mitty and preview the matchup against Caitlin Clark in number 4 Iowa and talk about his team and their nice win over Wisconsin last week. And I don't think Coach Mitty would have really wanted 6 games in 9 days, but I don't know who exactly is in charge of putting all that together. So we'll talk about that schedule as well. So that's a look at K-State in focus. Big announcement yesterday, although not surprising. People that are surprised haven't been paying attention at all. That's the easiest way I can say it. If you're surprised that the Royals are going to move to a different stadium, you really, really aren't that much of a Royals fan, because you just haven't been following it. Kansas City Royals owner Jerron Sherman released a letter yesterday announcing that the team is planning to leave Kauffman Stadium and start exploration for a final location for a $2 billion stadium and entertainment district. It's becoming challenging to maintain the cash, Sherman wrote in a letter released on the team's Twitter account. A new home would be a far better investment, both for the local taxpayer dollars already supporting our facility and the Kansas City community. The Royals have been at Kauffman Stadium since 1973, so in essence 50 years. The stadium, then known as Royal Stadium, cost $70 million to build at that time. The team did celebrate its 50th season at the K this year. Since the stadium has been open, the stadium known as the K by baseball fans and Kansas Cityans alike has hosted 2 All-Star games and 4 World Series showdowns. The K is currently the 6th oldest stadium in the major leagues. Only Ring Central Coliseum in Oakland, which is a dump, Fenway Park in Boston, Wrigley Field in Chicago, Dodger Stadium, and Angel Stadium have been in use longer. The stadium previously went through renovations over the years, the most recent one being the end of the 2007 season to opening day in 2009. Those renovations cost $250 million. The team's current lease at Kauffman Stadium is due to expire in 2031. However, the team has previously said they would like the stadium to open before the end of the lease. According to a statement by the Royals, they will entertain offers for a new site, which could include several sites near and around downtown Kansas City, Missouri. Some sites that have been mentioned includes a downtown ballpark, and the Royals did announce that they are keeping the team in Missouri. So any people in Kansas that thought that the Royals were going to come over, which there was really never any serious talk about that. The Chiefs threw out the olive branch to, you know, get everybody all riled up, and boom, next thing you know, sports betting is legalized in Kansas because we're going to get all this revenue, and then we're going to somehow convince the Chiefs to move over to, you know, over in the Speedway area or something, Wyandotte County. Still don't think that's happened either. But Royals have never really been seriously been talking about ever going to Kansas City, or even really acknowledged it very much. So the Royals will stay in Jackson County. They'll stay in Kansas City, Missouri, and I have no problem with that. It makes sense to me. There are people that I am amazed. I shouldn't be amazed. I mean, granted, people don't have all the time in the world to focus on things like we do when it comes to this. We host a sports talk show. We have our sports cast. We have to stay on top of these things. And so, and then some people that do comment about these things don't even go to Kauffman Stadium, or they went once in the last couple of years. They have no idea how old the stadium is. They have no, here's the other thing they have no idea about. They have no idea what other stadiums are like besides Kauffman Stadium, because that's your road trip. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't go to St. Louis to see their beautiful new stadium they built so many years ago downtown. You don't travel to Atlanta, which is a simple flight from Wichita to Atlanta, to watch the Braves in a brand new ballpark that is not downtown, but in an area that is highly renovated and now has all kinds of restaurants and bars around it. It's a really clean area. I went this summer. I was really impressed. You haven't been to the Rangers' new stadium that was opened just a couple years ago. That cost $1 billion. That has an entertainment district. They have concerts. They have restaurants. It's right next to the old Rangers stadium, which is still being used for like soccer. And then you can see AT&T Stadium out your back window at the new park. It's got a retractable roof. You can open and close. It doesn't sound like the Royals are probably going to do an open retractable roof. That's something I think they probably should consider if they want to host some big events. But that may not happen. Doesn't sound like it's going to happen based on the drawings that I've seen. If you've gone to Colorado, the Rockies are downtown, and there's a lot of stuff that's accessible for the Rockies. Now, parking is not ideal for the Rockies. There's a lot of parking garages, but it's not ideal. Downtown, one of the issues is parking. I'll tell you, in Atlanta, it was no big deal because technically it's not downtown. It's north of Atlanta. What was the other one? St. Louis is downtown. I don't think the parking is horrible there. Cleveland has a downtown stadium. I have not been there, but everything flourished and popped up right around the ballpark downtown. Yes, it's not going to be a whole bunch of wide open parking spots for, 25 acres like you have around Arrowhead. You're not going to have that. Will the tailgating experience be a little bit different? Yeah, I would agree with you. It will be. So that might be a bit of a bummer for the Royals to move if they move downtown, which I think that's exactly where they're going to go. And then my son goes, well, how are they going to make room for a downtown stadium? I said, it's not that hard. They find land. They'll even, some old buildings, they'll probably buy. They'll tear down. They'll compensate people to move. Hey, Kansas Speedway, that wasn't just, no, there were houses there. There were houses. There was a community there that people don't know about. And they basically made it worth their while to go somewhere else because that whole area was desirable. And look what it's turned into. Mm-hmm. And it's an economic boom for Kansas City, Kansas. And it also helps Kansas City, Missouri as well. So you have to have a vision. The Kansas Speedway, there was a vision. And then look at everything that popped up around it. It's become its own shopping district. It is a big deal. Now imagine that happening in downtown Kansas City. Or if the Royals go to a different part on the suburbs in Kansas City, Missouri, the same thing will happen. You build it, they will come. This is the thing that people don't understand that are already saying that they're upset that the Royals are going to leave Kauffman Stadium. First of all, you're a fuddy-duddy. All right? And I am too, by the way. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm a fuddy-duddy too. Listen, I like going to Kauffman Stadium, and I like that I can park close or far away. I like the tailgating and the open spaces to tailgate. I think the stadium is still beautiful right now, although it could be a lot better, but I think it's beautiful. The fountains and everything, which I'm sure they'll still utilize fountains in the new park, so that won't go away.
Yeah.
I think Arrowhead and some people like it. I personally think Arrowhead and the Royals should always be separate. I don't think they should be right next to each other. I think it's convenient at times, but it's a pain in the butt if they have a game on the same day. So, and I'll give you another example. I was just in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and the Brewers baseball park is not downtown. However, the Milwaukee Bucks arena is downtown. And if you've watched the NBA Finals a few years ago, when the Bucks won it all, people are celebrating. There's this huge open area that is sandwiched in between the arena that the Bucks play in, and there are tons of bars and restaurants, and it's two levels, and it's wide open, and you can see. And listen, that wasn't there before they put the arena there. All that stuff was not there when they put the arena there. Mm-hmm. Okay? Texas, when they built their new park, all that stuff that's around that new park, not all of it was there. Some of it might have been. The Braves, that was just a new frontier north of Atlanta. And now everything's popped up around it. Here's the thing that the fuddy-duddies, and I include myself in that, because there are things that I'm going to miss about Kauffman Stadium, and there are things I'm going to love about Downtown Stadium. But people get caught up on a price tag. First of all, this isn't going to cost taxpayers any more money than it is, so why are you worried about it? If you live in north central Kansas, why the hell are you worried about taxpayer dollars that you're not going to have to pay for? It's not your money, okay? You're not having to chip in any money for the stadium. You may say, well, my ticket prices may go up. Well, that happens if you're in a cruddy stadium and the team gets better. If the team gets worse, the ticket prices go down. It'll be the same thing in a new ballpark. Yeah, well, the ticket prices adjust and be a little higher. They vary. Well, maybe, but you should be getting a better experience for what you pay, and I think you will. You will have, like I've always said, at Kauffman Stadium, Arrowhead, when you win, where do you go to celebrate? There's Taco Bell? Taco Bell? Denny's? Oh, my God. I got sick there once. I'll never eat there again. I mean, where are you going to go hang out? The Adams Mark? I mean, or whatever it's called now? Coco Key? I mean, there's nowhere to hang out and party after the game. No, and they don't. People don't go out and party after the games very often. I mean, Chiefs maybe still tailgate. Royals games, everybody's packing up. So imagine if you win or you lose, whatever. You want to drown your sorrows or you want to celebrate and pop champagne. But imagine you leave the stadium and, you know that it's going to take a while to get out of the parking garages, right? You know there's traffic congestion. So instead of sitting in your car, like I usually do, waiting for it to clear out, or I park a mile and a half away, so by the time I get back to my car, then I can move without congestion. Now you could just walk right across the stadium, because that's the vision of what the Royals are going to do, and you can walk right into a restaurant and go eat. You can go right into a bar and have a drink, and you might even be able to go eat and sober up to where you're safe to drive later. People get caught up in $2 billion stadium. Yeah, it's going to cost a lot of money. Nowadays, it does. But do you know that they've already done the studies and now bring $2.8 billion in economic activity to Kansas City? And who knows what else they'll be able to host with a new downtown stadium if it's downtown. The other thing is it's going to bring a whole bunch of jobs to Kansas City as well. And that's a huge economic impact, part of the $2.8 billion. So you may say, well, it costs $2 billion. That's way too much money. First of all, it's not your money, so why the hell do you care? Second of all, if you get $2.8 billion out of a $2 billion investment, that's pretty good return. Has anybody out there invested in the stock market? If you put $2 in and you get 80 cents back, that's a really good return. You put $2,000 in and you make $800 off a $2,000 investment, that's really good. If you put $200,000 in and you make $80,000 off your $200,000 investment, that's really good. That's the exact same equation and formula that $2 billion turns into $2.8 billion. Somebody could do the math on your phone at home and do the percentage of the return of investment. Okay, that's significant.
40%, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it be 40%?
So
you build a stadium.
My brain's working right this morning.
I think you're right. So that's a 40% return on your investment, and it might be even better than that. Now it might be lower. Maybe it's 25%. But they're not going to build a $2 billion stadium and it's going to go under. No, it's not going to. They're going to build it right, and it might end up costing more than $2 billion. It might be 2.1.
But they might end up bringing in more economic value,
yes,
too, once
absolutely.
It's all said and done. This place pops up. Another place pops up over here.
Yes.
It's all part of that district that brings in. And then, I don't know how the district's going to be built, but if you look at Legends and see how they built that,
yes,
right? They've got KC Live. They've got concerts,
yes,
that are going on pretty much year-round there.
Yeah.
Find facilities and a venue that you can do concerts at, like we're seeing in Arlington.
Well, it's not Legends. It's Legends is out west. The KC Live you're talking about, that's downtown. It's not
Legends. I'm not thinking of that.
That's downtown by
P&L.
It's P&L.
Yeah,
KC Live's P&L. That's where
things mixed up.
Yeah, Legends
is about
Speedway.
But like even at Legends, there's things that are going on there pretty much year-round within what's going on with the soccer stadium out there and things like that. But P&L is by the T-Mobile Center and KC Live.
By the way, they built that, and then these things popped up, and T-Mobile didn't even have a regular tenant.
Yeah, and that's not in...
That's where they celebrate when they get the World Cup coming to Kansas City, when soccer and they have their big announcements. That's where people gather. That's kind of like what the Bucks have, what I talked about, that open area. Mm-hmm. They've got it. KC Live there in Power and Light. Now imagine having a downtown stadium where people just go migrate and hang out there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's still a congested area.
Sure it is.
At T-Mobile Center, right?
It is.
But they're still getting people to go there and have a good time. Now, for a Royals thing and a district like that, you're going to have a little bit more open area, I think, to try to figure out how you're going to do that. I don't know. They'll get it figured out. But it's just like there's more that can come out of that. Again, I'm not a huge fan of it because I don't like the whole not being the ease of access that Kauffman Stadium is, right?
Right.
And things like that. But if you understand how cities build and how franchises get money to come into the city and you can help each other, this is way better than what the system is
Listen, I think, you know, even if the Royals aren't very good, you're going to have the honeymoon period where people are going to go check it out.
People are going to be
likely to go to Kansas City, spend money, and that's part of the $2.8 billion return on a $2 billion investment. You know, you go and say, man, the Royals stink. Well, I've been to Kauffman many times, and there's nothing to do out there. And then I got to get an Uber or taxi, or I got to drive, you know, into Independence to find Applebee's to hang out and drink, have a drink or hang out at the bar. I got to drive a few miles. There is nothing. There's a gas station, there's Taco Bell, and there's a few hotels. There is nothing by the stadium. And I still am amazed over these years that there wasn't an area that was invested in and used some of the parking lot to turn into some restaurants and bars. I've never understood
even all that.
I've
wooded area understood. Back
yeah.
behind
one of those
the
edges.
Right.
There was
of the
potential
lot.
There.
It's just not.
There was potential
three or
there.
Four different things. Yeah. No, I get it. I get what people don't like about this as, you know, considering where we live, Kansas City is the one you're going to go to the most as far as baseball, and you're going to try to go three or four times a year, and you would just
for
love
those that
to
don't
be,
like it, you need to go yeah. to one of those places I mentioned
but
and
I
see what you think
say,
of that.
When I go to Denver, I love going to Coors Field.
Beautiful.
Because it's not just Coors Field; it's
the experience.
There are great restaurants all around Coors Field. There are great, you know, Colorado's known for their brewing and their microbrews and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Oh, there are so many good places out there to do that, and they're all around there. And
dispensaries, yeah. even got that out there.
That's
there
all
go.
Legal. There you go. And so, yes, and it is just such a fun time when it's Rockies home baseball night, and so I get it. It's a whole lot easier to drive in, get out,
sure.
and if you're going to do it three or four times a year. But when you go to visit some of these other cities, I desperately, like you said, go try a baseball night downtown somewhere, and you're going to have a lot of fun with the rest of the evening, whatever it is you choose to do. But I understand it. I think over time you'll understand why they do it, and like I said, half of it's not even the stadium. probably more than half is the development
pops
around
up around it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about the district, the entertainment area, and sports is entertainment. People kind of forget that sometimes. Sports is mm-hmm. entertainment. And here's the great thing. If you go to a Royals game, if you go to a Braves game, if you go to a Rangers game, you go to a Milwaukee Bucks game, you go to a St. Louis Cardinal game, you go to a Colorado Rocky game, all those examples I just presented.
One
even the
I've
Colorado
to,
Avalanche and the Denver Nuggets is right near downtown
yeah,
as well, by the way.
One that I've been to is the Memphis Grizzlies, and you turn literally right off of Beale Street, and there's the FedEx
right,
Forum.
Right, so.
And that's a hell of a time on Beale Street.
Absolutely. So whether
you can do it right if you're with people.
So here's my point. Whether your team wins or loses, whether it's complete dud, whether you're entertained or not during the game, you've got ways to make up for that,
mm-hmm.
and you have a chance to still have a great night, even though the product on the court or on the field might not be any good. I mean, you've got a chance to have a better, like you go to Cobham Stadium right now, the Royals lose, you're like, well, okay, I tailgated, I ate well. But there's nothing afterwards. You got to go a ways. You know, right. The Chiefs win. Okay, great. What if they get upset and they lose? You're in a bad mood, but there's nothing to lift your spirits. Whereas if you can go get spirits and lift your spirits at a lot of these different locations. You know, San Antonio's basketball arena is in a horrible spot, by the way.
It's kind of like Kauffman, right?
Yeah,
it's out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's not a good one.
Yeah. I wanted to go just to be there, but it's not around anything.
It is. There's nothing around it at all. Oklahoma City. Is awesome.
Oh,
yeah, the Thunder, that's a great example.
Bricktown,
I've been there. Bricktown's awesome. There's lots of things to do there. Oklahoma City Thunder, I love going to games there, and because there is a lot, hotels, there's easy, you can walk, you don't even drive, you can get a hotel room, and if you book early enough, it's not that costly. Depending on the hotel, you can park for cheap, or you got the valet, whatever, but there's lots of different places to eat there. That's a beautiful area, very scenic and nice. So, my point is that when you go to Kauffman Stadium, I think for the most part, you're putting all your eggs in the game. But the game is just part of the entertainment at these places where they have a lot going on right near the ballpark, and there's nothing going on by the ballpark in Kansas City at Arrowhead or Kauffman except for tailgating, or if you want to hang out and have a chalupa at Taco Bell.
And even if you're not a big downtown person, these newer stadiums, you have a lot to do within the stadium itself.
At the Braves Field, they have a climbing wall for the kids. They've got zip lines.
Yep. I think you mentioned the golf thing that you went to at the
X Golf at Milwaukee. Golf. Yep. It's open year round. You can go into the stadium and play X Golf and see the baseball field, even though the Brewers aren't playing. It's out of season. There's another thing you can. That's something else the Royals can do and make money off of, is have something like that and get people to come see the facility even in the off season and say, I really need to come back here when the Royals play a game.
Places in states where it's legal, some of those new places, they are incorporating sports books into the stadium as well, kind of like the same thing. So those are open, and sports bars with the viewing. So even if there's not a game that night, you can drive up and bet on whatever's in season and have a meal or a beer or whatever. And so, yeah, it's not just the game anymore, like you said. In fact, it might even be less about the game than it is everything else with the motels and restaurants and stuff. So I understand it. I like the K. It's, you know, especially if we kind of grew up on it and stuff like that. But, you know, times change, and you either change with them or you just
fall behind.
Or you harumph yourself out of it, and that's no fun either.
Sure, the older people love Municipal Stadium, right?
Right. They got over it. They got over it. Here's one little trinket that I thought of, too. I don't know. I'm sure the Royals have their merchandise shop open at Kauffman Stadium certain hours of the week. You have to drive a ways out there to go to the Royals Pro Shop. I don't think they get tons of people showing up. Whereas the other day, when I was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, we were sightseeing. Guess what? The Bucks weren't in town. The arena wasn't open. But the Pro Shop is in the corner of the arena, and it was open with a whole bunch of restaurants. So guess what? I spent $20. I got a pennant and a shot glass. I like to do that when I travel. That's my little way of having momentums without breaking the bank. And I got to see at least inside where people go in the arena. So I got a little bit of a glimpse of the arena, a little bit. And it was very accessible, and they're open, and there are people that go by and see the pro shops open because there's all kinds of traffic around in that area. That doesn't happen at Kauffman Stadium at Arrowhead.
Yeah. You got to have places.
So that's a chance for you to sell more merchandise and make more money that way, too.
Places downtown that you probably have to, like, give some of your merchandise to sell. There was a pop-up store when I went to San Antonio because you can't go to their pro shop, so they have a pop-up store there down around the Riverwalk. And so, there's all kinds of things that are good about it and better about it that can make more revenue for your team, right? Yeah.
The Alamo Dome, I went to the Final Four back in 18. It's not on the Riverwalk, but it's real near the Riverwalk, whereas the Spurs is way away. They should have built that where they could have been near the Riverwalk, because then there's tons of restaurants and bars and whatever, shopping. See, here's the other thing. People, we mentioned bars and restaurants, right? You eat, you drink. But there's also your retail aspect with shopping and stores. For the ladies, if they want to go shopping, and make it a family thing too. And then there's the kids' activities you can incorporate. Here's the other thing that I love when people immediately hate an idea because they're just stuck in the old times, right? And I'm guilty of it, so I'm not going to sit here and say I don't do it either. But you immediately say, and I've seen a few comments, even from people I know in this area, well, the $2 billion, that seems like, why didn't they just go ahead and keep renovating Kauffman? Well, you know, maybe you're driving a 1992 Ford F-150 that's broken down, and you keep band-aiding it up, and you keep putting $500 in to fix it. That's your choice. But eventually, you're probably going to get a new vehicle or a nicer vehicle at some point, right? Eventually, you have to move on. Well, the Royals did the band-aid part. They did the renovations, and it's still a nice stadium. There's no doubt. But there's so much more that the Royals can do by going to a different location. Way bigger economic impact for Kansas City by them doing it. And also, the thing that I'll point out is that they can still incorporate some of the things you love about the K now at the new park, and actually increase the love for that, because the fountains there, you build a brand new stadium, $2 billion, I would think they can afford maybe some extra fountains or some extra water, or who knows what else they might end up being able to do. So I think people, you know what is the norm. You know what you have now. It's no different than going into the grocery store and you've been in there for 2 years in a row and you know exactly where to get the pinto beans. You know exactly where the salsa's at. You know exactly where the chip aisle is. You know exactly where you got to get your ramen noodles. And then the store changes things around, moves some displays around, and now you go to where you're used to seeing the ramen noodles and you're like, where the hell are the ramen noodles? I can't find the ramen noodles. Why did you do this to me? You've ruined my life. Well, guess what you do? You either complain until your dreams come true and you stomp out going hungry because you didn't get your ramen noodles. Or what you do, you might still complain but ask, hey, where's the ramen noodles since you jerks messed up my day and moved them? And then you'll rediscover that the next time you go into the store, oh yeah, ramen noodles have been moved to aisle 8 instead of aisle 6. It's called adjusting. And you will adjust, all right? I know it might not be what you want, but you will adjust. You have to adjust. There's three constants in life, all right? And that is death, taxes, which shouldn't be, death, taxes, and change. That's the three constants in life. And you can hate technology. You can hate the internet. You can hate the smartphones. I know. I've talked to people. They hate them. Trust me. I know them. Some of my own family members. Mm. They hate technology. They hate this. They hate that. Everything's horrible because they don't want to adjust. They don't want to learn something new. They are set in their ways. So if you want to be set in your ways, and when the Royals move to a downtown stadium or somewhere else in 2030, 2031, whenever it is, if you want to still run out to the old K, if it's still up, if they don't demolish it, and miss the game because you love that instead of going to the downtown stadium, that's your prerogative, all right? If you're not going to go to Kansas City as much because you're mad that they're not going to have games at the K, then that's your prerogative. You can stay home. But I would say it's okay to open up the horizons and look at what else is out there. It is actually okay to open your eyes outside the bubble you live in. And we all have our bubbles. Some are bigger than others. But it is actually okay to try something different. It's actually okay to see what is out there. It's okay. And there are so many people that are just tunnel vision. And the whole thing that cracks me up about a couple of comments is about the price tag. And I'm like, dear Lord, you're not paying for it. So why are you so worried about that? It doesn't impact the franchise from operating. You think they're going to go bankrupt by building a $2 billion stadium? They've thought this out. They've done the numbers. John Sherman is a businessman. They bought the Royals for $1 billion. They know how to put this all together. They're not going back to taxpayers saying we're going to raise your sales tax from 8.9% to 10.9%. You know, they're not putting a vote initiative out there like they did for the renovations. Okay? This is going to be a public-private partnership to build what they want to build. And so really nobody should be complaining about the price tag, because your taxpayer money in Jackson County is already going towards stuff at Kauffman now. It's simply going to be moved over to the new ballpark. Mm-hmm. But they, as of now, are not planning on going out and asking you for more money in regards to taxes. So then what's the big problem?
That doesn't even factor into my thought process about it.
The price tag shouldn't
factor in at
all.
The only thing that factors into my thought process about it is the differences it is from ease of access and things like that.
That makes more sense.
For me, that's the only thing that I worry about, you know?
Right.
You know, we talked about Arlington in Texas, and you talked about Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
Those are in places that are kind of outside, too, that they built districts around.
Yes.
And so
it's like a whole other suburb.
That's going to be what will be a little bit different here. If they are truly trying to go downtown, they're going to have to maneuver a lot of different things to try to get anything that's even remotely close to that, right? Now, they can still do that. They can kind of incorporate some stuff that's probably already there and kind of turn it around into part of the district. But that's what I liked about Arlington when I went there, is there's still a lot of space out there. There's a lot built around it, but there's a lot of space out there for parking, and you don't feel congested at all.
Yes.
Memphis, kind of felt congested getting there.
Sure.
But once you're out of the parking garage and having fun on Beale Street and being there,
yeah,
you can see what the draw is for having something like that.
Absolutely. If you can walk to everything you want to do,
yeah,
that's a lot better than having to drive 5-10 miles to get where you are after having $12 beers at Arrowhead or Royal Stadium. That's probably not safe.
No.
So I'm actually excited about it. I am. I'm going to be sad, you know, when Kauffman Stadium is either imploded, destroyed, or, you know, they simply don't play there anymore. But I'm not going to sit here and say, well, that's it. I'm not going to watch Royals baseball anymore, because it should be a better experience and I should get more bang for my buck. Now, where I'll be disappointed is you spend a $2 billion on a stadium. Your sight lines stink. Part of this, you can't see one of the players on the field like Texas's new stadium.
I don't want to have a left field like Arlington's.
Yes, that's a joke.
Yeah.
You build a new stadium and there's no fountains and you don't have anything from the old stadium, and then there's not enough concession stands and there's not enough vendors and parking's a nightmare. You know, if you combine all that together, yeah, it's not going to be very fun. But I have confidence in the powers to be, the people that are putting this together, that they know what they're doing. And by the way, Cleveland, they made it work. Downtown stadium, there was stuff already there. They found a way to make it all work. Other St. Louis has done it as well, had the old stadium, built the new one. Well, there's a will, there's a way, it can be done. Now, whether the Royals have a better option to be close to the new women's soccer stadium that they're building, okay, over by the river, maybe that's where the Chiefs, or not the Chiefs, maybe that's where the Royals will end up being, is a little bit away from downtown.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible. Maybe the Royals will build, you know, to the south in Lee Summit area. I don't know. I have no idea. But downtown does appeal to me if they can make it work. Be huge. And trust me, go to other downtown parks. I think you would enjoy it. I think you would. Give it a chance. You got time, because the lease isn't done till 2031. So let's not get all too riled up about it. All right. Baseball managers of the year, Terry Francona of the Indians wins the manager of the year. Baltimore's manager was second. Mariners manager was third. Buck Showalter manager of the year for the fourth time with four different teams. But still the manager who never brought in his closer in a winner-take-all wild-card game. It still blows me away. That's an example of a manager that's really, really good at what he does, but either had the biggest brain fart of all time or isn't as smart as everybody thinks he is. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to win manager of the year four times is unbelievable. To do it with four different franchises is insane. But yet, I still think of Buck Showalter as the guy that left his best pitcher in the bullpen when the season was on the line and never brought him into the game. So, How smart is he? College football playoff rankings were released last night. No changes at the top. Georgia's at 1, Ohio State 2, Michigan 3, TCU 4, Tennessee 5, LSU 6, Southern Cal is 7, Alabama 8, Clemson 9, Utah 10, K-State is at 15, Oklahoma State is at 22 when it comes to the Big 12. So, you know, obviously TCU's the only shot for the Big 12 to get into the college football playoff. Listen, Georgia's going to be in the playoff regardless of what happens, unless they lose two games between now and the end, and that's highly doubtful.
Mm-hmm.
The winner of Ohio State and Michigan, as long as they don't lose the Big Ten championship game to a lowly opponent, the winner of that will be in. The loser may still have a chance to be in. Tennessee looks to be sitting pretty good, but I'm going to tell you the chaos. Here's where the chaos comes in. Georgia, Ohio State, TCU. Let's say they take care of business, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say TCU beats K-State in a Big 12 title game. Had to beat them a second time. They shouldn't have to, but they do. And TCU, Ohio State, Georgia take care of business, and they're your conference champions. Who do you put in the fourth spot? Now, assuming that let's say Southern Cal loses to UCLA this week, then they have two losses. That means everybody in the Pac-12 now has two losses. So I think that eliminates the Pac-12 champion for being in the playoff. So in the scenario, Georgia, Ohio State, TCU went out, and then Michigan, of course, loses Ohio State head-to-head. Michigan is out, but they have one loss to a really good team. Tennessee has one loss to the number one team in America, but got beat pretty good. LSU has two losses, but let's assume LSU wins out and wins the SEC title game against number one, an undefeated Georgia. Okay? And then what happens if Clemson runs the table, wins the ACC? I mean, we keep leaving out Clemson. I think Clemson's on the outside looking in no matter what, myself. I think Alabama is pretty much toast unless Tennessee would lose a game And then LSU would lose to Georgia. Maybe Alabama can sneak back into this. Although I'd still say Tennessee beat Alabama head-to-head, so Tennessee should still be over Alabama, even if they both have two losses. But I'll give you the chaos, and it was presented last night. Here's the scenario. I mean, the ultimate chaos would be Ohio State beats Michigan, and then Purdue beats Ohio State in a Big Ten title game. Georgia loses two games. Tennessee loses the game, and then Alabama's back in it, and TCU loses just one, might knock them out. But I'll give you the more realistic scenario. Georgia wins out. Ohio State wins out. They're in. I don't think TCU is going to win out myself, but let's say they do. Then you have an argument. If no Pac-12 champion is there, and you got Clemson not being good enough to be there, so you're going to have a team that didn't win a division or win a conference title, and here's your choices. A one-loss Michigan team who lost to the number two Ohio State in what could have been a close game, possibly. Mm-hmm. You're going to have Tennessee with their only loss being to number one Georgia. You've got LSU with two losses, and people are going to say, well, Tennessee crushed LSU in Baton Rouge this year, and that is true. But if LSU then beats Georgia in the SEC title game, and Tennessee lost to Georgia, then they all beat each other. So are you putting Tennessee in with one loss over LSU, who beats number one Georgia and has one more win because they made it to the SEC title game? I mean, how do you determine that? And how does Michigan figure in? Michigan, Tennessee, I'm guessing they'll say Tennessee over Michigan because SEC over the Big Ten. But Tennessee and Michigan would have really good losses, their only loss, but they both wouldn't win their division. Both wouldn't be in the conference title game. LSU have two losses, one bad one to Tennessee. Who are you putting into the fourth spot? Michigan, Tennessee, or LSU? And I think Michigan's situation myself. Mm-hmm. I think it would come down to Tennessee and LSU. And I think Tennessee should be in because they beat LSU head-to-head, and that should be the ultimate tiebreaker when you're deciding between two teams.
Yeah.
But if you're deciding between Georgia, Tennessee, and LSU for a final spot, then I think you do the whole round-robin thing. But I don't think Georgia's going to be the number four team, even if they lose to the SEC. They're going to be one of the top two or three. So that's where people are going to get lost in this whole argument, right? Well, LSU beat Georgia, so LSU should be ahead of Tennessee, even though Tennessee punked LSU in Baton Rouge. Well, but Georgia's not in this conversation from the standpoint that they're solidly in. So if you eliminate the three-way tie, in essence, and you go then to the last two, what do most state associations in sports and any level, what do they go to as a tiebreaker to determine their champion?
Head-to-head.
Possible. So LSU would have one more loss, but they'd have one more win. Okay, well, actually, they wouldn't have one more win. They have the same amount of wins with one more loss, but they'd be conference champions of supposedly the greatest conference that ever lived. And Tennessee won't have won a division, will not have been in the title game, but punked LSU and Baton Rouge. Who are you picking? Who takes the last spot, Tennessee or LSU?
I'm picking Tennessee.
I would, too.
Because the head-to-head, the committee's probably picking LSU because they just won the SEC championship.
I agree, and that means that Tennessee's win at Baton Rouge means nothing, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I fully believe that's what would happen.
I do, too. Everybody's sitting there going, Tennessee's in great shape. If Tennessee needs TCU to lose, I think.
Yeah. If Georgia wins out,
there's no argument. Yeah. If Georgia wins out, Tennessee's in.
Yeah. I mean, because they'll take Tennessee over Michigan.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, that's what Tennessee needs to hope for is so that Georgia
TCU
wins out.
TCU win or loss, whatever happens with TCU. If Georgia wins out, Tennessee's in a perfect spot right now.
They're in because LSU be eliminated because they lose the title
game to
Georgia.
They don't have to play another game.
Exactly, right.
So they'll only have one loss.
So Tennessee,
this is all predicated on Tennessee.
Tennessee's
winning out
in
too.
A great spot. They're in a great spot as long as LSU doesn't win the SEC title.
Yeah.
Or and I still say if TCU goes 12-0 and loses the K-State Big 12 title game, TCU should still be in over Tennessee. I think that's how it should be. They shouldn't have to beat a team twice. I mean, what if Tennessee played Alabama a second time? Do we think Tennessee's winning the rematch? Why should Tennessee have to play Alabama a second time? But I do think Tennessee's sitting in good shape. I think the Big 12 championship game, whoever plays TCU is going to ruin it for TCU. And I think TCU's best chance of getting in with one loss is to lose one of the next two games and then have a rematch and avenge it in the Big 12 title game. The problem is, what's their next two games, TCU?
I don't even know. I know what K-State's next two games are.
Let me pull it up here. TCU football schedule. They've got at Baylor, and then versus Iowa State. And there's still a scenario where Baylor can get in. So if you would lose to Baylor, but then avenge that loss in the Big 12 title game, I put TCU in over Tennessee. Now, if they lose to K-State, I think they're out.
Yeah, because that's the opposite, right? That's K-State avenging a loss earlier to TCU.
And they always remember the last loss instead of if you had avenged it.
And they wouldn't have the so-called conference championship either. So,
I
don't know.
I think TCU has to win out.
I do, too.
They shouldn't have to.
You say you might, or you would put TCU in on that scenario over Tennessee.
If they avenge their only loss. Like, I think, to me, that if they go 12-0 and lose the Big 12 title game, I think they're going to be knocked out. But if they would, you could argue, okay, they tripped up at Waco, at Baylor, not an easy place, right? But then you turn around 2 weeks later and you beat Baylor in a rematch, I think that would give you a better chance of being in than just losing the Big 12 title game to a team you beat early in the year.
Right.
And maybe it doesn't matter. I see
your argument, but I don't think they'd get in over Tennessee. I think that's what would happen. I think Tennessee
You think
would
no matter what, they ain't getting in over Tennessee?
With one loss, and Tennessee has one loss.
Right.
Even though they have one more win, and they made the conference title game?
Yep.
And once again, it goes back to the $64,000 question. How much does the committee value conference champions?
Yeah.
And I don't know. Every year it changes.
It depends on what your name is.
It depends on what your name is. You're absolutely right. There is a proposed tweak to the NFL replay system. Bill Belichick, I like this. The big thing recently, the Bills and the Vikings had a game, and the Bills were down 30-27. They came back, kicked a field goal to force overtime in Buffalo. But there was a play where the ball clearly hit the turf. It was not caught by Gabe Davis, but it kept the drive going. And the officials have now come out, the NFL, saying, our bad, we messed up. You had replay and the people on the field to get it right, and you still screwed it up. They didn't even review it. Didn't take time to stop it, review it, because under 2 minutes, the coaches were powerless. They couldn't throw the red flag and challenge it. Bill Belichick says this is not the first time this has happened. It's real simple to fix. If a coach still has a challenge, he can still challenge no matter what time of the game. Forget the two-minute thing.
Yeah.
I agree.
I've never understood that.
Me neither.
To be completely honest with you. Like, if
that means
I
you're putting the ultimate
this,
trust into a guy's up in a booth.
Like, what's the difference of the last 2 minutes compared to the rest of the game?
Right.
Like, I've never understood that part of it. Like,
It does give coaches the flexibility to have a challenge they can use and know that they don't have. It allows them not to have to worry about
but
the final
that's their
2 minutes
for saving the challenge if they have it. Right?
No, I get that. But what I'm saying is, you have 58 minutes to use your challenges instead of 60. So the less plays that happen, the less chance that you're going to feel a little bit more comfortable making a challenge with 5 minutes to go. When you know you can't make any with under two because you are trusting the booth to get it right.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, the booth and the official on the field. But here's the thing, to me, that whole thing has been predicated on, you can't challenge in the final 2 minutes, is all predicated on, we're never going to miss it. Well, you just did.
Yeah.
So now all bets are off, and so I agree with Belichick. If you can't get it right, the coaches should at least be able to throw a challenge flag that if they got one left, or call the timeout and make them have more time to look at it. They should be able to do that. They shouldn't be powerless like Coach O'Connell was the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree, Belichick.
Yeah, for sure. I've never understood that part of it anyway, so I definitely agree with him.
Most dangerous team in the NFC right now. Most dangerous team. What team do you not want to face when the playoffs come around? What's the most dangerous team in the NFC?
I kind of feel like this is not supposed to be the top team. Like, I don't know. So I would kind of say the 49ers.
That's my answer.
That's where I was going. But
they are the
scariest
team.
And, you know, whatever. I don't, that's where I was going to go. But I'm trying to think in my mind of other teams.
At some point, I want to give the Vikings credit for what they're doing.
Yeah. But they won a lot of close games.
Yeah.
I think the Niners are the most dangerous team. They can run the ball, yes. They're getting healthier. Their defense, they have a pass rush. They have now McCaffrey. They got their running back who ran for almost 1,000 yards, Elijah Mitchell, back. They got Debo Samuel. I mean, they got weapons. They got Kittle. They got Ayuk. I know Garoppolo is a thing that holds people back a little bit, but their defense is pretty good. Now, granted, they got lit up like a Christmas tree by the Chiefs, although they did have some injuries in that game. And it was McCaffrey's first game as a Niner as well. I think the Niners are the most dangerous team in NFC. I think by the end of the year, they're the best team. They might not be the one seed, but I think they... I mean, if you had the Niners and Eagles right now, would you just automatically say Eagles win?
No.
No, I think it's a 50-50 game.
The Eagles just lost to the Commanders, well, so it's hard to say
but
that.
But I'm just saying it's a 50. I think it's a 50-50 game, and the Niners have four losses.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else we're missing in the NFC that's a sleeper?
Not right now.
I don't think so.
I don't. There's so many teams that should be good that just have not done it yet.
Right.
And, you know, maybe by the end of the year they'll get some things figured out here, and they'll have some kind of run there, like in the last three or four games, and you're going to think a little different about them. But
I think the Buccaneers are a dangerous team.
Well, yeah,
I do too.
It's always in your mind, right? Mm-hmm. When Tom Brady's the quarterback,
and
right?
They're like getting healthier.
You can sit there and ask that question, and that's a team that I was thinking of, mm-hmm. right? That was going through my mind.
Yeah.
Like, Tampa Bay's not been good this year for the most part, but they still have Tom Brady, and they still have a lot of great weapons around him.
Yeah,
and so they always have the defense, right? Like that can always be
keep you in games. And now they ran the ball well the other day, and that makes them so much better. Yeah.
Somebody's going to regret that the league didn't take care of Tampa Bay in these last couple weeks.
Yeah. The Rams, that's who you blame.
Right, right.
That and the horrible division they're in this year.
Yeah.
The most dangerous team in the AFC. What team do you not want to face in the AFC playoffs? And let's exclude the Chiefs.
Yeah, because the Chiefs are basically why we're talking about this, right?
Right.
Oh, that's
still
tough.
I
mean, if Buffalo's healthy, I think that's the answer, but...
I disagree. I think the most dangerous team in the AFC is the Miami Dolphins. They pose more challenges to a defense than the Bills do. Their speed is out of this world with Waddle and Hill. And their defense is good. And here's the other thing that I'll point out about the Dolphins, and this is why I put the Dolphins as a more dangerous team than the Bills. And granted, Josh Allen's struggling right now. If he would figure it out, although he may be really severely hurt too. But
that's why I said the healthy thing.
Right. Yeah. But let's assume Josh Allen is healthy going into the playoffs. The Bills and the Dolphins are as healthy as they can be, right? I think the Dolphins are the most dangerous team, and here's why. I think the Bills and Dolphins defenses are both good. Although the Bills' defense has not been good in second halves for like a month now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Dolphins' defense is just as good as the Bills' defense. I think, you know, obviously people think Allen's better than Tua, but Tua's having the better year. The Dolphins have more weapons. They have more speed. And they have, I think, more guys that really scare you, obviously, with Waddle and Hill. But I'll give you the X factor. The Bills this year have run the ball better than the last few years. They're not great at it, but they're better. The Dolphins can run the ball. The Dolphins can run the ball. They got Mostert from San Francisco. Now they just picked up Jeff Wilson. They can run the ball. And if you can run the ball and actually stick to it and use it as a weapon, unlike Andy Reid, and then you got to worry about Waddle and Hill and Tua, and then a defense that is not like the Chiefs back in 18, where we had unbelievable offense, but we couldn't stop anybody. I think the Dolphins are the most dangerous team in the AFC. More dangerous than the Bills. Now, if the Bills were fully healthy, Allen's healthy, and Tremaine Edmonds is healthy, and Tre'Davious White is back after his ACL, I think he had last year. I think he came back recently or will. But Hyde is out for the other safety. Poyer's been banged up. You know, they do have Von Miller. I don't know, man. The Dolphins are a team that really scare me. And I hate to say it. Clover's just basking in the sunlight when I say that as well. But, I mean, I can't deny it. I mean, you watch the Dolphins play. They haven't lost yet with Tua playing a whole game. They've beaten the Bills head-to-head. Mm-hmm. They've beaten the Bills head-to-head. I mean, I think they're the most dangerous team, and I really would prefer not to face them. And here's the thing. By the way this is going, the Chiefs could face the Bills in the divisional round again, because the Bills are third in their division.
Yeah. Every team in the AFC East, if the playoffs started today, would be in the playoffs.
That's correct. And the Bills would not have, I don't think they even have a home game in the wild card.
No, I don't.
They're third
so.
In their division, so odds are they wouldn't host a wild card.
Yeah, actually, I think they would, actually.
Would they host a wild card? They must be a four, then.
Yeah, I think they're fourth right now in the
How can they be four? How can they be the four seed when they go with the division winners?
Do they? Well, okay,
yes,
then
they
don't. Yeah,
they don't.
Yeah, they wouldn't then.
No, they don't. They would be on the road. Because they wouldn't be,
yeah,
it wouldn't be a division winner.
It's not like the NBA. They don't do the the record.
Be the top division winners. The one gets the bye. The other three, two, three, four. And then you got your wild cards, five, six, seven. The Bills would be the six or the seven.
AFC's got a lot of teams that are like this proverbial.
And the Bills win the wild card and then go to Kansas City 7-1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got the Baltimore Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals hovering around too. That in a normal year they'd be like the team that nobody wants to play because you know they can. The Bengals can get hot on any given day.
Well, and they get Jamar Chase back. That'll obviously help them a ton.
And then Baltimore's got that unique style and.
I still just
I think there's something missing with Baltimore
too.
I think it's
Lamar and Crunch Time passing the ball.
But I do think if they can maybe get
he's done it in regular season games, but he doesn't do it in playoff games.
Yeah, and I think I'm reserved on the Dolphins because I haven't seen Tua do it. You know how I am, right? Yeah. Like I've not seen him do that at the crunch time in the playoffs and in that moment,
right?
And do they have enough for that moment,
right? But nobody had seen Mahomes do it either.
You can believe Mahomes when he gets to that moment a little bit more based on everything that he did during that season, that first season that he started. Mm-hmm. Like Tua's, I don't think at that level, right, to where I just go into the playoffs thinking, oh, he can take this team to the Super Bowl.
But what I'm saying is I think he has a more balanced team than Mahomes even had when he won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, for the overall, the whole team, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Well, those are dangerous teams. And obviously, you get the wrong matchup, you can be done. But I thought it would be interesting to talk about that. To me, the Dolphins, Niners, and Bucks look dangerous. And, you know, I think the Bengals are still a somewhat dangerous team if they get healthy, too. So, and the Bills are always dangerous because they are very, very talented, no doubt. But so are the Chiefs. Chiefs are pretty dangerous, too. Thanks for tuning in to Sports Ticket. We'll have Jeff Mitty, head coach of K-State, on tomorrow, along with Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.